Hello there. Certain avid flat racing fans are ones who get particularly narked by what they perceive to be the total domination of jump racing coverage in the media at this time of year. We'll be pleased to know that the countdown to the 2024 Cheltenham Festival has well and truly started. However, we are not simply looking forward in this latest bumper edition of the front page. We're looking back to a spectacular 2023 Cheltenham Festival, and doing it alongside myself, Lee Mottershead. I am joined by our West Country correspondent, James Stevens, Racing Post senior reporter, Chris Cook, and making his debut on this show, no doubt to a huge signing fee, Mr. Paul Keighley.
Yeah, I wish.
Good Cheltenham?
Yeah, it was a great week. It was really good fun, thoroughly enjoyed it, lots of work, not as many winners as I'd have liked, but a couple of decent enough prices to keep my head above water, yeah.
20-1 Seddon?
21 Seddon, yeah. It was my first winner of the week, so we're talking race 5 on the Thursday. So, yeah, it was a long time coming.
But a 20-1 shot, yeah, you can wait for those.
You can afford a few losers when you get those in, and I had a little bit of anti-post on Envoy Allen, so I suppose he was officially my first winner of the week, but not on the day, if you know what I mean.
Good man. Chris, did you eat into the mortgage over the last few days?
Oh, you're a bad man asking me that question, because, you know, you were sat fairly near me the whole week, and I'm fairly sure you noticed the lack of celebration.
Well, yeah, but that might just mean that you're a quiet celebrator.
No, I like to let people know. Okay. You know, I'm trying to remember the last time that happened. I think it was Spirit Leader in the County Hurdle. No, it was a tough week for me. I'm going to have to... I said it last year. I'm trying to adjust the way that I think about betting at the Cheltenham Festival, and I obviously haven't managed it yet, because I'm still trying to find the sort of Seddons, and I didn't manage it.
Concentrate on the Wood Ditton. That might be the...
Maybe, yes, I should become a flat guy. Why not?
James, what about from the West Country beat? Did it supply you with considerable success?
Sadly not. Two winners officially trained in the West Country are Paul Nichols, so there was only chance for two of them, and I don't think I could have been in profit
big
anyway.
Big prices, though.
Yeah, I know, yeah, and I still didn't find the 18-1 shot, even though he told me in his ultimate guy, Paul Nichols, that he thought it was a massive each-way chance, and I decided not to listen to him. But no, I thought it was a brilliant week on the whole, but like the other two, I'd have liked a few more winners.
Well, on that semi-positive note, we shall move into the programme. Before we do so, a very positive piece of news relating to the Racing Post Members Club. Okay then, let's get going. We'll rewind back to 1:30 p.m. onwards on Tuesday afternoon, the first day of the festival, and what a first day it was, Paul Keighley.
It was indeed. I mean, it just had everything, didn't it? I mean, starting with the very first race, in fact. Barry Connell went training his first winner at the Cheltenham Festival, Michael O'Sullivan riding his first winner and putting down a marker for Rider of the Week as well. I thought he was brilliant that day. I mean, for a youngster who had ridden his first Grade 1 winner only earlier in the season on the same horse, Marine Nationale, to let his horse pop the last when he's a length down on a Willie Mullins-trained Paul Townend-ridden favourite. I just thought that was just really brave, and it just showed how confident he is as a young jockey. He knew how much horse he had in, and he got the job done brilliantly.
And the day just flowed on from there?
The day flowed on from that. After that, we had a really good Arkle winner, one of the best we've seen in the last few years, you know, up there, not far away from your likes of Shiskin, etc. And Duvan going a little bit further back. Then you had, you know, according to Racing Post ratings, the best champion hurdle winner in the history of the Racing Post in Constitution Hill. We're talking about champion hurdle performances, not overall performances, because he hasn't quite matched an Isterbrack so far. But, you know, that was a brilliant, brilliant run. Mm-hmm. Beat the right horse. And then, of course, Honeysuckle, who raised the roof. Now, she was brilliant. I'm one of the people who was no fan of these mares races, but you know, if that race hadn't taken place, that wouldn't have happened, would it? You know, you wouldn't have got that result. Now, I would say that, you know, it is extraordinarily unlikely that we'll get a better mares race run at the Cheltenham Festival for many, many years. It was a really, really good race. The runner-up, Love Envoy, is obviously very good too. She never missed a beat. She hurdled it. She flew over every single hurdle. Could not have done any better. But got beat by who's still a very, very good mare. Maybe not champion of the class anymore, but still a very, very good mare.
Chris, if we maybe kick off the discussion with the Champion Hurdle and the Constitution Hill, did he do enough on Tuesday to get that billing of the best Champion Hurdler of, or best Champion Hurdle winner of our lifetimes?
I mean, he. I don't think you could ask him to do any more.
Yeah.
It makes those comparisons so difficult because, you know, some of those horses are a long time ago and you're emotionally attached to some of them, aren't you, more than others. It's very difficult to compare form lines, you know, across a distance of 30 years. And they're probably not running on exactly the same course, are they? The rails have been moved around a fair bit and blah, blah, blah. Look, I would struggle to put anything from the last 30 years ahead of him, you could say that.
Yeah.
He's a really exciting talent, and what's even more exciting is what is going to happen with him next. You know, does he stay over hurdles and keep following the kind of campaign that he's had, or, you know, there's still that chat about whether he might go over fences. I think all involved, you know, they'd want to get their hearts checked before the first schooling session. Yeah, he could nearly do anything. And I mean, that's an interesting, we'll get to the Friday, but, you know, we've got a Champion Hurdle winner and a Gold Cup winner who are really exciting young horses, sort of at the start of their career at the very top.
Yeah, I was watching it, James, from towards the top of the grandstand, and I wrote in the piece on in Wednesday's edition, as he jumped the final flight, I just shouted, oh my God, because it just seemed an outrageous thing to do. At that point, I hadn't realised there was a shadow in front of the hurdle that was probably encouraging him to take off. That underlines how much scope he's got. If he was yours, it's quite a big if this, on Racing Post wages, but if he was yours, would you be sending him over fences next season or going for the Champion Hurdle?
That's a very nice, easy question for me to say, Burley. To be honest, I think you'd have to sort of look at the sort of go over fences route with him because he's a horse that sort of looks so exciting that you can now discuss, okay, look, maybe we can try and do the unthinkable and have a Champion Hurdle and a Gold Cup. It's sort of things that, you know, Dawn Run, you sort of wouldn't even mention it, you wouldn't even discuss it, and suddenly we're here going, well, yeah, you know, he has won a sort of point to point, so you can see it. There's so many different ways of looking about how exciting this horse is, and I think one of the, you know, we look back on Cheltenham week, I thought it was a brilliant week. A horse of that quality, just so much better than the opposition, of which State Man is an exceptional horse in his own right, who's been the best of Ireland, undisputed this season in that sort of division. To beat him the way he did was so exciting. If he was mine, it would be all the way towards the Gold Cup. To be honest with you, it may sound a bit daft. I would look at it and go, who says he definitely has to run in an Arkle?
Yeah.
They could dream big and try and go for all three of the big races. Dare to dream with him. And that's what he has done. He's inspired that way of thinking, oh, well, you don't have to go here and then there and then there. With this horse, we're now going, he can do anything.
Just the bravery at the final flight there would give you pause, though, wouldn't it? I mean, it's one thing to sort of fling yourself a hurdle in that way, but, you know, when you start doing it to fences... Yeah. That's another matter.
It's interesting. I was on the Monday, just wandering around the track, I was speaking to Noel Mead, who was making the point that, in general terms, his view is it's often the best hurdlers who are more likely to fall because they leave themselves so little margin for error.
Right.
And he's that sort of jumper. He doesn't soar over the hurdles. He flies them, but he's so pinpoint accurate that if anything did go wrong, you'd fear for him.
Well, Musgrove Flyer fell a few times over fences, didn't he? And he was a very, very, very good hurdler as well. I mean, you know, it's part and parcel of it, isn't it?
For years, that was the only thing that stopped him winning, wasn't it? Musgrove, you'd either win or fall.
Yeah, exactly, win or fall, that was it. Constitution Hill obviously made a really bad mistake in his point at the last. That's what got him beat by any harm in asking. So we know he can we know he can jump fences, we know he's got a mistake in him, but I mean, obviously he's a bigger, stronger horse now. It's interesting what James said. If it was his, he'd go for the Gold Cup. If he was mine, he'd stay over hurdles. But he's not mine, so therefore I'd be cheerleading for going over the Gold Cup. But that's what they've got to think about. You know, what do we do by the horse? Like, you know, we're already saying this is the best hurdle we've seen ever. You know, lots of people are going to say, well, no, he isn't. He's only won one.
Sure.
Like, you know, so what do you want to make out of him? Like, you know, so it's interesting. I think we're going to be talking about him going over fences all the way up until September, and then they'll announce the he's over hurdles.
So the good thing is, he is still incredibly young. He's only six.
Yeah.
So, in theory, he could win another champion hurdle next year at seven, win the champion chase at eight, and win the Gold Cup at nine. It's If he does stay over hurdles, we're going to discuss Wednesday's races a little bit later on, but if Ampere Pass goes the champion hurdle route, at least he has a new potential superstar to take him. It wouldn't be boring. It wouldn't necessarily just be an obvious procession.
No, I guess. But you do need that, don't you? Because
you do.
I think if he stays over hurdles, exceptional talent like him, the strong likelihood is he's going to win the next champion hurdle and maybe the one after that as well. And you frankly don't want your best races to turn into sort of predictable processions. At the same time, you have to give room to an extraordinary talent like him to express himself. So as you say, Willie Mullins is going to come up with something that'll test him.
The problem is, though, that the decision scares all the top novices over fences, doesn't it?
Yeah, it can
do. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and that's really interesting, because if we just briefly took, before we go on to Honeysuckle, Marie Nationale, in the winner's enclosure media huddle, Barry Connell, who, one thing he did not lack for in the build-up to the race was confidence.
Absolutely.
Or bullishness in his horse's ability. He made the point in terms of the following season will likely go to the Arkle unless Constitution Hill keels over. So even, now, I think by that he just means a setback or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know what I mean? He has such faith in his horse, and even he is saying, we'll only go down the champion hurdle route if Constitution Hill is not around or is doing something different. So there is that sense that until we know what Constitution Hill is doing, it might well, as you say, Kills, impact on the decisions made by some other people.
Mm. And look at the back-to-back champion on Tuesday.
Yeah.
Who decided, let's not go and take him on. And one of the things Henry Bromhead said was, well, look, you just saw what he did, and we've made the right decision.
Yeah,
you know?
And he did, didn't he? He did make the because she never has been as good as he is now, and she's certainly, she would maybe finish second or third? Third, probably more likely than second, based on what we knew from her.
I mean, I don't think you need to address that question. She's probably not going to win, was she? Yeah.
No.
So,
it was such the right decision.
Absolutely. And I'm grateful for the existence of the Mirror's Hurdle that we were allowed that moment, and they were allowed that moment, much more importantly. It was so cathartic. At the same time, I sort of think that is what the Mirror's Hurdle should be, a race for horses that probably aren't going to win the champion hurdle. Rather than a soft option for a horse that really could get competitive in that race. I mean, I'd be in favour of some sort of rating ceiling, but then you'd have to bring it down to a grade two, I suppose, at best.
To be fair, in the previous 2 years...
She'd have had to have run in the champion hurdle, though, wouldn't she?
Because she'd be above the rating hurdle.
She'd still be above the rating.
Yeah. And I suppose the thing is, we've got to notify that in the previous 3 years, the champion hurdle has been won by a mare, Epatant and Constitution Hills, and Honeysuckle. And so the race has... The Mayor's Hurdle didn't stop them running in the champion hurdle.
No.
They were on the up, they had a positive trajectory, and it's really only because Constitution Hill was around. I'm sure if Constitution Hill had stood on a stone at 9 foot, well, I know that he had done, because Nicky Henderson was saying on Sunday morning...
Henry was calling
him. Henry Brummer called him at 9:15. He's still all right, isn't he, Nicky? He's still okay.
Do you know, that ought to have been a bit of a clue to the rest of us that Honeysuckle was in fantastic form, and he was sort of actually thinking, maybe we could have a go at this race. It's also in my mind that when those mares were winning Champion Hurdle, and still now, they're getting a £7 allowance, aren't they?
Yeah.
I do think the Champion Hurdle is one of those races where you probably just want level weights and we'll find out who's best. Because perhaps they would have won at level weights anyway, and you're nearly taking away a bit of credit from them by giving them that allowance,
Yeah. We could do half an hour on that another time. Couldn't we?
Well, right.
We certainly could. Right.
It may have been covered that ground. Yeah.
The scenes themselves, though, were so wonderfully emotional. And you get this at Cheltenham, don't you? With certain horses, certain people, that everybody who is there watching that scene, whether they've backed Honeysuckle or Love Envoy or Epitaph or whoever, they're all so delighted. That real sense of community that you get, particularly in jump racing, it was a fabulous thing to witness.
It was. It packed a real emotional punch, didn't it? And you kind of forget, don't you, going through the winter of small fields and low octane racing, just how much bigger the Cheltenham Festival can be. For all the chat about it, it's not the be all and the end all. It's the best place to win. It's the place that makes champions. It makes those emotional moments that bond people to the sport.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to wrap up the day. Keels, El Fabiolo next season, if he takes on Energon Men. If I said you at this stage, what do you think?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm always, because Energon Men will be 10. We know that Grade 1 winners at Cheltenham are rare at the age of 10. Okay, Cider Burley's did it in an average stayer's hurdle. But at the end of the day, you've got to be very, very, very good horse to win one of the major Grade 1s at the age of 10. So Energemine is a very, very, very good horse, of course. But El Fabiolo to bust at RPR 170 in an Arkle, you've got to think he can go higher too. So I would favour him at this present moment, yeah.
And Galliard de Menil, top of the hill. How on earth does that win?
Strange, wasn't it? I think it was sort of a race, wasn't it, where sort of everyone thought he was a banker, and it was just the bizarre wave at Cheltenham is. There wasn't actually that much drama when you think about the week. There, bar the sort of Albert Bartlett, the races were pretty straightforward. It wasn't anything too over-the-top dramatic. That was sort of the result, wasn't it? But, yeah, he's a Forestier, which we thought he'd be, and sort of all those nationals and stuff, he looks the sort of likely type for them.
Weird race. Could have had three different results, couldn't it? Marlow Mission could have held on. Chemical Energy was being kidded to keep in touch with Marlow Mission, but when he fell, the jockey went for him straight away.
Right.
And if he hadn't have done so, he'd have had something to follow for a little bit longer. He may have lasted a bit longer himself. Only punters got out of jail there, the anti-post punters there, because he was the one that went short very early in the season.
He did. Chris, there was one... I mean, we were there, we were very lucky. There's one set of people who are probably ruining their luck at the minute is those people that might well have gone to Cheltenham on the Tuesday, but decided not to. And there was definitely a big difference in the numbers on the Tuesday this year compared to last year, and on the Wednesday and on the Thursday.
Yeah.
Ian Renton, the Cheltenham boss, has come out and doesn't sound overly concerned. He points to the teacher strikes and the rail strikes, the post-COVID bounce in 2022, potentially the weather, and he thinks the crowds will bounce back next year. How concerned would you be?
Obviously, there's got to be some concern there. You'd rather an event like the Cheltenham Festival was just packed, and you know every space that was available was taken. The Tuesday was only 88% capacity, and it was sort of noticeably easier to move around during the week, which sort of worried me a bit. You know, like Friday in particular. Speaking as a reporter, you're trying to get from the winner's enclosure back up to the press room, which is like about half a mile, and it's just jammed with people normally, but this time you can sort of run it with no problems, which is a little bit worrying. But there's lots of extenuating circumstances, and you know, last year, as you say, was the first time back with crowds for a couple of years, and there was a real sort of one-off feeling to that. It was almost a hedonistic feel, like people had just broken out of jail and this was sort of free time that they'd been given. You can't keep on sort of going at that kind of level. And I think maybe that experience, it was so crowded last year, might have put off some people. You know, they're thinking we've paid top dollar here and we're kind of jammed in like sardines.
Yeah, I did mention cost of living crisis too. Of course, people just haven't got as much money to spend.
Exactly that.
At the moment.
But hopefully the people who were there this time had a better experience than last year, and you know, they'll be more likely to come back.
You can make all sorts of excuses. You can blame the strikes, you can blame the cost of living, ever. But anecdotally, I went to the Dublin Racing Festival and I spoke to people on both sides of the RSP, and there was loads of people saying there's no way I'm going again. They pushed up the prices too much now. This is far better value, and I'm going here. So no matter what the reasons were, there are at least some who have decided that they pushed it too far. And it's not just Cheltenham milk, it's not just the racecourse milk in it, it is the town as well itself. Yeah. Like, you know, we were charging ludicrous. I mean, the one thing I did see that I actually liked seeing it was, you know, I mean, a couple of days before the festival started, on, you know, somebody put up a price, £865 per night, but it said seven rooms left available. Well, good, I'm glad you didn't sell them.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Well, because it's just taking the mickey.
A lot of them were cancelled. That's one of the themes in Cheltenham this year, is a lot of people had rooms and decided before that free cancellation point, they'd decided, you know what, it's simply too much and we've gone away. That was sort of a bit of a theme. Obviously, the fan village didn't take place this year with a sort of lack of interest. The one positive I think we can sort of take is it was, in terms of watching it visually, anyone watching it on the TV, it looked like a place you'd want to be.
Yeah.
It looked fantastic. Yeah. And so there may be people today, tickets are out, we're speaking here on Monday morning, tickets are out today. There may be people who have seen that, possibly on social media. I know ITV did some really record numbers, ITV social media impressions. There may be people that have got that feel-good buzz about Cheltenham, that yes, it is expensive, yes, it does cost a lot to get there, but it is something special, isn't it?
It is, and the Jockey Club will be very keen to get those numbers up next year, if only because it's readily acknowledged that of all the Jockey Club's events, the Cheltenham Festival is hugely important in the Jockey Club's annual income. And although the hospitality spend was really good and those who spend the biggest bucks carried on spending, there must have been a significant forfeiture of revenue there last week because of those people not coming, and that you'd imagine would have an impact.
It's one of those weird things, you know, there'll be worried faces in Newmarket because, you know, they haven't made as much money out of Cheltenham as they would do in a really big year. And that sort of money kind of splashes over and funds other parts of the business. I don't think they want to be looking to increase the numbers too much next year, though, because, you know, if you could just sustain it at that level where people really, you know, enjoy it and have a good time and come away thinking they've had a good experience, that's what makes for a sustainable business. One thing that they might address is the getting out of the car parks, which, you know, it doesn't affect us because we're stuck in the press room until whenever, but, you know, lots of anecdotal evidence from last week that it was a real chore trying to get out right after the last race.
Although, James Stevens, you live so close to Cheltenham, you could probably have walked it. But I don't think you did walk it on Wednesday, did you, when you enjoyed a cracking day of action?
I did walk it on Wednesday.
Did you really?
I've still got the blisters to go from it, yeah, unfortunately. Oh, but yeah, in the shoes, that was wrong shoe choice around me. Yeah, I thought Wednesday was a good day. I mean, Tuesday was always going to be the peak. Yeah. But I think we need to give a bit of credit to Nergame. I thought that was a fantastic performance. And I think in any other year, we'd be sat here discussing Cheltenham Festival and saying, that was the performance of a week. I think it was a brilliant performance. I know the ratings were good. And to be honest, winning a championship race that easy, Paul Townend came out and said it was easy. Yeah. That takes some doing. Look, obviously, Edwardston was one of the sort of big talking horses, and he didn't run well at all, which is a bit disappointing, and he's probably going to be out for the season. But you've got to give credit to Nergame. To do that in a championship race was really quite special. A day of really some brilliant performances as well. Empire at Pass was a really, really lively winner for Ballymore. I know we've had some good horses win that before, but there was some sort of vibe, and anyone seeing the preview night circuit was hearing that this horse was going to be the next big thing, and he delivered. You know, he's still lightly raced. You know, we've discussed him as possibly a champion hurdle contender, definitely deserves his place. I mean, he's only had those few runs, so the excitement of that young horse is what we want from Cheltenham. And
is it weird that you didn't start favourite?
It was
strangest eventuality of the week, I thought.
The strangest betting I've ever seen. It's obviously after the Irish had the first eight in the Supreme, Hermes Allen actually went out to 9-2 in the evening.
How?
At 6 p.m. on Tuesday evening, he was 9-2, pretty much across the board. And then at one point, he'd gone down to something like 7-4, hadn't he? Like, you know what I mean? It's absolutely
none
crazy.
Of it made any sense.
None of it, you know, the 9-2 didn't make any sense
to start with.
But the actual coming back and ending up in a short-priced favourite over the horse that everyone was talking about was the Mullins Hurdle Banker of the Week.
Can you offer any sort of explanation?
I've literally no idea. I mean, we were saying, I had no choice. I've got to back Hermes Allen now when he went to 9-2.
Yeah.
But I mean, I wouldn't have touched him at that price. But I mean, people jump on the bandwagon sometimes, don't they, when horses start to shorten? And
it does build up its momentum, doesn't it, sometimes?
Very, very strange.
And on the betting front, Tony Bloom, owner of Energumen, seemingly might have had a nice little winning punt on Wednesday, as well as the Champion Chase Trophy.
By all accounts, yeah. I mean, he doesn't tread carefully. He's one of the most shrewdest people around. He's not reckless at all.
No.
But he knew what he was doing, and I dare say he's had a nice chunk on. And, you know, this is the second...
He's had it easy in the end, though, hasn't he? He can't have known Edward Stone was going to blow it like that.
This is the second year running that Energumen has won a Champion Chase that fell apart because his main market rival did not show up. And it's a bit unfortunate for him because the way he's won both years, you'd have been surprised if the other one beat him anyway.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? He was that good. And it's funny, this year, the three widest margins at the Cheltenham Festival were Champion Chase, Champion Hurdle, Gold Cup.
How interesting. Yeah.
The real class performers.
That's great. That's great to hear.
Key stat.
Yeah. Chris, the real whacker, given the sports fury over Whipperals, unfortunate name for a Brown Advisory Chase winner, but a smashing winner as well, because that was a superb story. Paddy Neville.
Yeah.
Trained, left Ireland and came to Britain because he couldn't get owners. I mean, wins a race with
quite late in life. He's been long established in Ireland as a trainer, been training for years.
Brought over his nephew from Stinney to lead. I mean, Paddy led the horse up himself on Dipper Chase Day, but he brought his nephew, a labourer from Sydney, to lead up the horse. Just every layer of that story is fabulous.
And even when he was hoping to come over, he got let down for the yard that he was supposed to be getting into, and ended up renting from Ann Duffield. And like 18 months later, here he is winning a Cheltenham Festival, grade one, no less. You know, with a horse who's had a profile through the season, you could see him coming. But still, when it came to it, I think there were lots of doubters. You know, these sort of people look at this name on the race card that they're not that familiar with and go, well, you know, obviously Gordon Elliott or Willie Mullins will have something to beat him. And Jerry Colomb, I mean, if you backed him, you may be feeling that you were a bit unlucky because he was closing, and
he
just
quick
doesn't
enough, was he?
Quite. It's not a race for fast horses,
no,
is
but,
it, really?
But he just didn't have that speed in the middle of the race to lay up and
no,
give himself
not.
Too much to do.
Yeah, I guess that's fair. But I mean, you're only talking about inches, aren't you? All it would have taken was for that horse in front to just get a bit tired, the way you've seen a million horses get tired coming up that hill. Mm. It was great, great finish. Good result, and I'm sure that Patrick Neville's going to get some more horses out of this because you know he's done so well, not just with that horse. He's grabbed headlines at other times this season, and it's basically his first full season in a completely new place. It's a big deal to be able to achieve that.
Absolutely, and if we look to our feel good stories, James, A Dream to Share is one in the bumper. 85-year-old John Kiely, a legend of Irish racing, training his first Cheltenham Festival winner for the Gleeson family, who got their racing to their core. Their son John Gleeson rode the winner. His dad Brian, who had owned the horse until selling to JP McManus, was working for ITV Racing during the day. They spoke wonderfully well afterwards. Again, wonderful story.
Yeah, it was great, wasn't it? 18-year-old jockey as well, having his first ride at Cheltenham. I mean, he just can't ride it. That's what this sort of place does. And I mean, on the horse himself, I thought he was quite impressive. He looked like a sort of speedier bumper horse. So probably, I mean, we're all looking through the bumper about 10 times, aren't we, for sort of clues for where to go next. And to me, it looks like possibly one for a Supreme. But yeah, it was a great story. I think the other sort of key element on Wednesday, I thought was really good, is that we had the threat of frost overnight.
Yeah.
And we had a lack of rain. Yeah. We had loads of rain. The racing surface at Cheltenham, given Wednesday on that day last year, was a complete and utter disaster, really, and horses pulled out, John pulling, getting all sorts of stick. You couldn't criticise the surface, and I don't think I heard anybody criticise the surface. I mean, given the week we had and sort of the run-up to Cheltenham and the issues ahead with frost earlier in the season, I thought the team at Cheltenham did a phenomenal job for the racing surface on Wednesday and all of the week. It's not an easy job. They come in for a lot of criticism, but I think credit where it's due. The surface was fantastic, and we got the results for it. And the one other sort of key element as well, Langer Dang was one of two winners for Dan Skelton.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, we've talked a bit about Paul Nicholls and the week he's had. That's a good week for Dan Skelton. I mean, it's fair to say that sort of in Cheltenham's gone by, he's had a few winners, but this was a real good step forward. And he's won with horses that, I mean, Langer Dang's a good horse, and Favoir was a big outsider in a county hurdle. They weren't big fancied horses. They were horses that, I suppose, bettered expectations. We talk a lot about the Mullins dominance and other Irish trainers that perhaps have the firepower. When we talk about Patrick Neville and being sent good horses, for those big trainers to be able to turn up at a meeting like Cheltenham and to get winners, that's good for sort of levelling that playing field, even if they are sort of already some of the big trainers in the country, I think.
And you mentioned big fancied winners. We had across the day there horses past the post first at 11-10, at 6-4, 5-2, 10 out of 28 winners across the festival returned at 3-1 or shorter. That was compared to 5 out of 27 in 2012, 4 out of 20 in 2002. We're all punters. Has the way the festival has changed in that regard, and add in the way that anti-post punting has changed too, because there were a number of horses I backed anti-post the festival thinking I got good prices, went off bigger prices.
This is
the
problem.
Day.
I mean, the problem is an on one and no bet, which when it came along years ago was seen as, oh, this is great value, this is, but no, the bookmakers in the last couple of weeks, particularly the bookmakers, squeeze everything up so much you can almost guarantee that unless you've landed on one that is a real left field last minute gamble, you are probably going to get one better prices and better each way terms on the day, because they really do squeeze them. They all bet to 200% or more, and they know that people want to punt as well. That's the thing. Right. So you've got all these prices, and people go in and well, like, I have non money, no bet, and they're taking. You know, I will from now on within the next 2 weeks in the run up of Cheltenham, I will not have a single bet. As far as horses winning at short prices. I don't think the festival has changed over the last few years, has it? It's just sometimes this happens, it's cyclical. Sometimes you get quite a lot, sometimes you don't. We still had Jerry Colomb beaten, we still had Shishkin beaten, we still had Lucia beaten. You know what I mean? You still get your fair share of short priced horses beaten.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't say this is a massive sea change. And you still had some completely unfathomable results at the same time, didn't we? So
you always have those. But it's a sea change that's happened over time, I think. I mean, last year was worse. There were 16 of the 28 winners were 3-1 or shorter last year. And I just think, you know, if you're the kind of punter that I am, where you're looking to get winners at double figure prices, I should be so lucky. you've just got fewer chances now, haven't you? There might only be 10 or 12 races that you've got to shoot at. I mean, you don't know what those are going to be in advance. Likely to be the fiendish handicaps, you know, good luck sorting those out. Yeah. I have to try and adjust my thinking. The game is largely identifying which of the shorties are actually reliable and which are there on inflated reputation, or a bit like, you know, well, we're going to get to Shishkin in a moment, but you know, you could identify him as potentially vulnerable in advance.
Well, let's get on to Thursday then, Chris. That's your day. wasn't just Shishkin. I mean, Mighty Potter was a big shorty in the first race. He was beaten. What's your take on the Thursday?
In punting terms, this was the day when the tide really turned, wasn't it? And suddenly, you know, punters who'd been sort of flying along, if they like to bet at the head of the market, ran into a brick wall, mostly because Sire de Burley, 33-1 winner of the Stayers Hurdle. I mean, I don't know if any of you guys had the perspicacity to back him.
Ben Hutton,
Spotlight put him up. Extraordinary stuff. He's 11 years old, Sire de Burley. I mean, God love him. We all know that he runs well at Cheltenham, won a couple of pretemps finals. I wrote in the paper about a week before Cheltenham that he got a terrific right to win the first of those pretemps, but now that he's won a Flaming Stayers Hurdle, you know, it looks like he was thrown in back then. I mean, even having seen him win, if you ran the race again tomorrow, I still wouldn't be interested at 33-1. I don't know how it's happened. He's the oldest Stayers Hurdle winner since Crimson Embers, for crying out loud. The last six or seven winners of that race were no older than seven.
Well, I think he was taking part against Willie Wumpkins back in the day. I mean, he's that old. He's been around. He's been around forever.
They tried to get him in the pretemps. The only reason he was in the Stayers was he missed the qualifying race. And, you know, J.P. McManus, you know, one of the shrewdest men on the planet, is in the winners' enclosure going, how did that happen?
It's quite heartening, that though, isn't it, Kills? When, you know, JP winning a race like that with
bet on him not having had anything at all on it. You know, a horse that was briefly 80-1 the night before. Actually, a friend of mine texted me and says 80-1 four places. We need to have some of that. So I looked, and when I looked, it was 50s, and we decided not to back him at all. So,
no,
I mean, I didn't fancy him in the slightest anyway. So I'm not claiming
heartbreak.
I'm not claiming anything, but yeah, it was just one of those. When you look back at it, he's won two pretemps. He's been second in the Stayers. I know he's 11, but you know. You know, all kudos to those who spotted that this was an upset race, but when you do look at it in hindsight, there wasn't a single horse that had a bomb-proof piece of form. None of the form was that good. No. It was all mid to low 160s. Like, you know what I mean? We're not talking superstars at all. The favourite had beaten a regressive Somerville Boy on an horse rated 123 last time out, and in Ireland, and you know, the others were just beating each other home by the league.
Do you know, there's an element also of second string, isn't it? Because, you know, when Gordon Elliott's got the Favre and Tiapo, punters sort of hate to back the horse from the stable that's not as fancy. They think that's, well, that one's going to finish in front of that one, whatever happens. So maybe that's why he was a bigger price than he deserved to be. Still wouldn't have backed him, mate. Then we had the Ryanair chase was before that, and, you know, it's all about Shishkin and, you know, of course, he looked like a god at Ascot, you know, just a short time ago. I think that was part of it. And I did say this beforehand. Yeah. You know, you've seen a few horses look really good on that day at Ascot, Reynoldstown Day, and then go to the festival, and they just can't produce it because, you know, they've run a big race. Even if they won easy, you know, he's put up his best performance there for about a year. And, you know, that can take it out of a horse. That being said, you know, we're standing talking to the trainer in the unsaddling enclosure afterwards, and there's like a half a dozen different reasons that were discussed, you know, why he might not have run
to his
best.
There was all sorts of rumours before the race. He wasn't working well, he was coughing, it hadn't gone well, blah, 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 blah. And then you talk to other people and say, no, there's nothing wrong with him at all. I think at the end of the day, if he'd have jumped, he'd have won.
Well, he's supposed to be rather than the winner.
You know what I mean? His jumping was terrible.
He kept going left.
And, you know, I think he got to salute the horse's courage, because the one thing he's always done is try. The one thing he's always done is try, and that kept him in it. His jumping was awful that day for whatever reason. He does, when he's not quite right, he doesn't. Do you remember when he first started, he was flying and you thought, well, this is another LTO, he's just absolutely flying along. But he's in a way, hard work of it these days, isn't he?
He's become a more interesting horse, hasn't he? Because you just can't always rely on him being that rocket. Credit to Envoy Len, who travelled through the race like he was a proper star. You know, that 3 years ago we were all saying he would be. And there have been a few disappointments since then. He was heavily backed in the King George and it didn't happen.
And he was the culmination of a fantastic festival, an emotional festival, but in terms of the racing results, a fantastic festival for the De Bromhead team. And to get him back 2 years after that horse, I mean, we keep using his phrase now, second coming, but he was billed as a second coming. And when he ran in the Turner's Officers Chase in 2021, having just left Gordon Elliott, we all know what happened there, Jack Kennedy walking away from the scene. And since then, he'd largely, not quite to the extent of, say, a Sam Crow before him, but his star really had sunk and his share price had fallen. But that was a super performance.
He sort of dropped off the radar a little bit. You know, there's going to be people watching him go past the post going, oh, I didn't even realise that was in the blooming race. You know, I thought this was all about Shishkin. Anyway, so it was a fun day. It was a really difficult day. It was also, throwing this out there for discussion, the very first day at the Cheltenham Festival since the Tuesday of 2020 when Willie Mullins didn't have a winner.
Yes.
Now, you know, from his perspective, that's not necessarily a huge disappointment because he only had 10 runners that day, which was quite restrained by his standards. There were other days last week when he had over 20. And I don't think actually any of them started favourite on Thursday. But anyway, for whatever reason, he ended up not with a winner. Prior to that, he'd had 13 consecutive days at the Cheltenham Festival where he'd had at least one winner. And the last time he didn't was the day that Shishkin won the Supreme running down Abacadabras. Mm. Yeah, Honeysuckle beat Penny Didio, nipped up her inside round the bend. And he had another odds on shot that was beat that day as well.
Well, Lorena got beat in the Champion Hurdle that day, didn't she? Mm.
So, I mean, it's just an extraordinary run. I mean, you know, this is another great festival for Willie Mullins, but there's a sort of amazing run of his that's sort of come to an end. Yeah. Which in a way sort of illustrates where he is. I counted up, he had 76 runners this week at the festival, which has got to be a record. You know, I don't think anyone's keeping those figures, but
must be.
It's 13 or 14 more than he ran last year.
Apparently the best strategy at the Cheltenham Festival is just to lay every single horse Willie Mullins runs, because he runs so many, you're going to make money.
Mm. Well, and his five...
They're all short prices this year that won, weren't they?
He had five favourites, and the biggest price winner of his was Imperial Pass at 5-2.
Yeah.
So I suppose... I mean, you'd be laying some at big prices.
Handicappers you'd be hiding behind a hedge or two, wouldn't you?
Do we think that, bearing in mind going into the festival, Willie was on 88 career winners, and people were saying it was far from beyond the realms of possibility that he could get to 100 by having 12 winners during the week. Six winners, sensational number, and he's won a Champion Chase, and he's won the Gold Cup, future stars in there with Empire Pass. Six winners. Would think he will have gone home thinking, happy with that, or gone home thinking, I thought I'd have a few more.
Surely you sort of look at what he's won and the races he's won and the sort of the big targets and happy. I mean, the handicaps are always tricky.
Yeah,
You know, you want to be winning the Gold Cup. I think that was the race, wasn't it? I think, you know, we'll talk about the Gallop and the Champion on Friday, I'm sure, but I think that was the sort of the signature horse, wasn't it? That was... I mean, we've looked back at Willie Mullins and some of the great horses he's had. You know, getting them right is always the ones you want. And, you know, he's had two really good horses that were the big talking points, Gallop and Shotman Ergame, and they've both come in. There was one point I couldn't make on Envoy LN.
Go on.
I now make it that he's the first horse to win a Grade 1,
a
bumper, a hurdle, and over a fence.
At the festival? Or did you see...
No, at the Cheltenham Festival.
Right. Really? Blimey. Well, you've surprised. Are you surprised, Keels?
I am surprised.
He's surprised as well. And you're surprised too, aren't you, Chris?
I am, I guess it is quite a mix of disciplines, and there's a lot of those bumper horses that don't go on as you would hope they might.
Quite a few seconds. Cucard was second.
Envoy Allen is, I think, is the third most successful champion bumper winner now when it comes to open company races.
Yeah.
And it is literally Florida Pearl and Q Card, who I think won 8 or 9 Grade Ones, open Grade Ones each. Then Envoy Allen with 3, and no other one has won an open more than one open Grade One, as in out of novice company.
So not the second coming, but not bad at all.
a very, very good horse.
And still young enough to come back and win more, you know.
Speaking of which, in a seamless link, still young enough to win more, Galopin des Champs was
there. There we go.
Thank you.
Completely unrehearsed.
Thank you. Just a happen by accident, this. Galopin des Champs, the outstanding hero of Gold Cup Day. It obviously always leads to Gold Cup Day. If you look at Coral put out something before the festival that showed again every 28 festival races are in the top 40 betting races every year. Right. And the Friday races, even the Hunter Chase and the Mayor's Chase are right up there towards the top of the list. It was a stunning Gold Cup. Just briefly before we get to the Gold Cup, we had Paul Townend having a moment of redemption on Lossy Mouth in the Triumph Hurdle race, dominated by William Mullins, as we knew it would be, 1, 2, 3, 4. We've already discussed Favoir in the County Hurdle for the Skeltons. Another winner for Paul Nicholls. We'll talk a bit more about him in a second, with that dramatic moment when Corbett's Cross, who I think was beaten at the time, went through the wing. Nice heartwarming winner for Bradley Gibbs in the Hunter Chase.
Win for Wales, Lee, yeah.
Win for Wales, yes, thank you, James. Impervious, great in the Mayor's Chase.
4-3 to Britain on St Patrick's Day.
Yes, now, yeah, actually, save that thought, Kills, because that's a nice way to finish off this programme. The Gold Cup itself, though, was a compelling, riveting spectacle. From start to finish, you know, you, even in the early stages, you had a Hoist and You're bowling along, Minella Indo scrubbed that lot out the back. You had the drama of, you know, two horses on the deck as they ran to the top of the hill. Thankfully, both got up and galloped away fine. Galopin des Champs really didn't have the run through the race that Paul Townend would have wanted. Everyone seemed to want to be on that fresh strip of ground towards the, more so than in previous years. Paul found himself further behind than he wanted, then he pulled wide. The horse made a horlicks, well, certainly a bad mistake at the third last fence, but came back on the bridle. And you had this wonderful spectacle of the best horse in Britain, the best horse in Ireland, going to the final fence together. The two young horses, who you hope will be the future of staying chasing, and then one of them galloped 7 lengths clear to potentially become as good a horse as Willie Mullins has maybe ever trained. Certainly he was speaking after the race in a way that underlined how much pressure he himself had felt under, because whereas Album Photo had emerged as a Gold Cup horse, they had thought this was a Gold Cup horse for a long time. I'm listening to Harold Kirk during the week, who buys majority of horses for Willie Mullins, and he was saying that they had so much confidence behind him, they believed he was a Gold Cup horse. And goodness, he proved it. James, he was a sensational Gold Cup winner.
Yeah, it was fantastic, wasn't it? I think when sort of I watched back the other day, some a lot of the Gold Cup finishes from sort of year gone by, and you do sometimes get those sort of the horse that travels up and the sort of the question mark is, are they going to sort of stay? And I think that was possibly the main question mark with him.
Absolutely.
In years gone by, I mean, Mike Bite was the classic one with Native River, the one I remember most, and it was that sort of tough Native River that came through. And I think it was with Galopin des Champs, it was. Bar one or two sort of jumps that weren't, you know, spot on perfect, it was just everything you wanted from a Gold Cup winner. He travelled through the race, he was in the positioned in the right place and travelled into it, and then just finished and stayed that trip really, really well. That doubt was firmly put to bed. And I think, as you say, I mean, having the two, the best in Ireland, the best in Britain, right over the last together, it was an epic to watch. For the two champion trainers as well of those respective countries. And I think as well, I mean, we've talked a lot about sort of the whip and stuff, and the BHA said that a lot about the finishes. It was an enjoyable finish to watch.
Yeah.
It wasn't one that you would sort of look at and be troubled by at all. It was a very sort of easy race on the eye to watch, and it was a case of who's going to do it, and one of them did it, and did it very, very well. I think from somebody watching racing for the first time, it was drama and it was enjoyable. It was good, top quality sport.
How good is he?
Yeah, he's really, really good, to the point where I think you have to be thinking, you know, he could be the triple winner, you know, three Gold Cups well within his scope, isn't he? You're sort of throwing ahead again, as we were saying, with Constitution Hill to try and imagine what might beat him next year. You know, Lompresse would be a contender, but again,
he's not as good as him, though, is he?
Well, yeah, he's not going to be Fav to beat Galopin des Champs.
It'd be unusual to have two horses quite as good as that. I mean, Brave Man's Game would have been a good Gold Cup winner. Galopin des Champs is a very good Gold Cup winner, and I think when you look at the placed horses, you have reason to be very, very positive about the form, because there were three horses in the race, just three horses in the race who'd won grade ones last time out, and they'd done it by an aggregate of 27 lengths, and they were Galloping Deschamps, Brave Man's Game, and Conflated. You know, you've got the right horse with the current form.
And actually, it's sort of still a young Grand National winner, sort of running like a Grand National winner, sort of into fourth place.
It's a proper West Tipper, that wasn't it? Storming up the hill at the end of the.
Yeah, it was. So I think you've got, you know, I think there's every reason to be very, very positive about that piece of form. Now, we all know that some horses, they win their Gold Cup and it just knocks the game out of them altogether and they don't come back.
Well, that was the old norm, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was the old norm. Now, I still think Galloping Deschamps did it fairly easily, despite his mistakes.
He was in the race place through the race, wasn't he? Because I think they've gone a hard pace, haven't they? And probably Hoisinger was going to pay for it.
He jumped a little bit stickily. He jumped big at times, which is, you know, which he always has done. Like, you know what I mean? So he did enough wrong to still, I mean, to come back on the bit so quickly after that one at the third last.
Yeah.
I mean, he's obviously very, very good, isn't he?
I did just throw it out there to Willie afterwards that, you know, maybe he, if there was a horse who could win a Gold Cup and then go and win a Grand National, it would be him. He didn't seem too keen on that.
Remind me again what his words were.
He said, in that way that he's got of containing his thoughts, he goes, I don't know. You know, being so polite and gentlemanly, instead of saying, you blooming idiot, you know, why on earth would I think of doing that? I'd love to see him just get the entry so that they preserve the option, you know, because that would be a major, major achievement, wouldn't it? You know, and you could see him doing it. The way he finished out that race, he's going to stay the Grand National trip. Obviously, he gets top weight. But he's going to be so highly rated, most of the field will be out of the handicap, I should think. Or maybe not most, but a good portion of them.
And I'm sure Paul Townend would enjoy the experience. He certainly, hopefully, enjoyed his week at Cheltenham. Again, big week for him because it's been well documented that he was the recipient of criticism from his trainer twice at the Dublin Racing Festival.
Yeah.
For rides on Fasel Vega and Lossy Mouth. I remember after the first race of the festival, Fasel Vega's defeat in the Supreme, he didn't want to talk at that point. He was, you know, Craig didn't want to comment on that. But then the week went on and he's given some horses some great rides. Ruby criticised him for his ride on Appreciator in the Turner's Novices Chase, as he criticised Davy Russell. Mm. But Willie kept making the point this year, as he has in previous years, but it's when the pressure is on Paul Townend that he delivers most. And that Gold Cup ride was absolutely flawless. It was a stunning performance in the saddle.
Yeah, I think he's got that thing they talk about with sportsmen, that you've got to have amnesia. If you have a bad performance, you just got to forget it, go on to the next race and not have it hanging over you, sort of making you make more bad decisions. I mean, and the prime example of that was when things went wrong at Punchestown a few years back on Albume, and he missed the last fence for no reason and came out the next day and had, what's it, three winners that he rode?
So whenever
there is pressure on him, and maybe even if things have gone wrong, he's obviously able to just shed it and move on.
A few of the talking points from the Gold Cup. Paul Nicholls, speaking to him in the winner's enclosure, or should we say the way he was in the second spot, but he was as pumped in defeat as it's probably possible to be. He was listening to the 3:45 at Fakenham on his phone.
Real racing.
Yeah, while speaking with delight at the performance of Brave Man's Game, but he had Stay Away Fay win the Albert Bartlett one race beforehand. Stage Star, superb ride from Harry Copland, had a great week as well in the Turners. Some other horses ran big races too. Having had a 2-year drought at the festival, this was a significant week for the champion trainer, Chris, from your, but he will be delighted at the moment, won't he?
Yeah, he was. And I think the other thing as well is we've got the big Nicholls celebration in the paddock, which I think just made up next Cheltenham for me as well. I spoke to Paul Nicholls on Saturday, and in typical Paul Nicholls fashion, he's realised that he's now closing on his record prize money.
Yeah.
So he's now got another big target in mind. I think a lot has been made of Paul Nicholls, sort of his approach to sending horses to Cheltenham. He's sort of be very clear that he's got Aintree and he's Ayr as well, and that there's lots of different targets in Sandown, of course, for where horses can go. But Cheltenham is the place he wants winners, and I think it's clear that you want to see the British champion trainer in the meeting. We didn't see the champion jockey, which perhaps is another sort of question mark about the race programme and stuff, but to have Paul Nicholls there with winners, I think that's important, because we talk a lot about this sort of Irish-English, which Keel sort of touched on. To have Paul Nicholls having two good winners is great for the sport. And for him, I think that's just another sort of sign that really sort of shows that he can cut it at the top table. It's not just about sort of those sort of lesser days. It shows that the Nichols team can produce those good horses. And I suppose the major disappointment, we touched on Hermes Alain, he was sort of the one that people thought he could be the next sort of superstar. He's probably the letdown, but to have Brave Man's Game second in a Gold Cup, he said it was one of the best Gold Cups he'd seen, which, coming from a man who had Demon and Kater Czar and those horses, I think that sums it up. But great seeing him back in winning form at Cheltenham.
Yeah, excellent week for him. Of those who didn't have great weeks, Davy Russell would probably be one of those. I mean, he hadn't even expected to be riding at the festival not that long ago, but no winners for him. And in a strange turn of events before the Gold Cup, we lost Mark Walsh on Manila Indo because of his injury. And then just a few minutes before the race, we found out that Davy Russell wasn't going to be riding Conflated for Michael O'Leary in the Gold Cup. He hadn't had a fall during the week, but he was off for a sore collarbone. That was a reason that was given. But again, a strange mini soap opera ran through the week. ITV had done a series of interviews pre-recorded with Michael O'Leary, in which Michael had said that he was disappointed that Davy Russell had come back, and basically the implication was he should be putting his family first at his age. Davy Russell then came out on ITV and said, I've got as much respect for Michael O'Leary's opinion as he's got for mine. It was all a bit odd, Chris.
Yeah, they've had a tricky relationship, haven't they? Over the years. I mean, that's got the makings of a good book, I think, except that we've all read it already. I had no idea what's gone wrong. But after the career he's had and all the knocks he's taken, Davy's entitled to be feeling a bit sore. It is just a bit odd that he sort of missed what would have been his last chance to ride in a Gold Cup on the horse that was placed at the end.
So, yeah, it was a bit odd.
Anyway, hopefully he'll mend in time for other races like Fairy House and Aintree and Punchestown.
Yes, and Keel's another theme through the week. What we thought might be a theme through the week was the whip. Of course, the first festival stage under the new whip rules, but it didn't really happen.
Listen, I was one of the ones in absolute fear for it, especially after the first disqualification the week before. But that sent the message through, I suppose, didn't it? And the onus with the whip has always been on the jockeys, but we have known for long enough, I suppose, that they're all prepared to break the rules if they know they're not going to get disqualified. And that's what's happened year in, year out. So they brought this in and it worked. It's hard to say it didn't work, isn't it?
Yeah, it probably is, isn't it, Chris? I mean, only six referrals, no DQs. A lot of people said that they thought the finishes looked better under the new whip rules. I mean, if you are BHA this morning, if you're Julie Harrington or you're Brant Dunshay or you're anyone in a senior role, you're probably quite pleased, aren't you?
Yes. In fact, I wrote 2-3 weeks ago that the sort of BHA must have been tempted to just about declare victory in the various arguments that we've had about the whip. And they sort of brushed up against that on Friday, I thought, with a press release sort of noting that there wasn't a large number of referrals. I don't know if the finishes look tidier. I think maybe if people are seeing that, then are they looking for that? Are they expecting to see that? But I'll say this for sure, there was no loss of competition.
No.
There were dramatic finishes all through the week. I think I saw maybe one ride where, it might have won under the old rules because you could sort of see the jockey pausing and not using his whip where previously he would have done without thinking about it. But I mean, even that is only conjecture, which is why I'm not naming the horse concerned.
Yeah.
One winning ride referred and at no risk of disqualification. So yeah, it's big. I'm sure the BHA are satisfied. It's a harsh new regime. There's no question about that. I think, when jockeys are getting punished, the suspensions they're having to serve are disproportionate to the offence that's been committed. If you're talking about one over and getting 4 days, or two over and getting 7 days, or 14 days if it's a class one or two race. That is a great deal to put up with, and all of the burden falls on the jockey's shoulders unless there's an actual disqualification. Nevertheless, there is a bit less of the whip use in the finish of these races because of the changes that have been made. Jockeys are having to think much more about how they use the whip and do it a bit more carefully, more judiciously than in the past. Those are good things.
Yeah, can't be a bad thing. And Kiels, you touched on the 4-3
to Britain on the Friday.
Massive shot.
Jaws dropped to the floor on that occasion. And of course,
in the previous 3 years, it was 19-2 to Ireland.
Absolutely, yeah.
And so, a 4-3 to Britain on the final day is amazing.
What about in general? 18-10 to Ireland. So the same score
as last year, but it was only 11-10 going into last year, wasn't it? You see, going into the final day last year, it was 11-10.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a British person. And you'd like to see...
Are you?
I am, yeah. You'd like to see British Sables doing well at the festival, better than they've been doing, certainly. I don't know, I sort of came away from this festival quite encouraged in some ways. I mean, some of the stats were bad. The novice hurdles, look at the Supreme and the Ballymun and the Triumph. Oh, desperate.
That's what worries me.
You know, how many novice hurdles are there? Like, you know what I mean? Stay Away, Faye won for Britain. You Wear It Well won for Britain.
Absolutely, yeah.
But before that, there hadn't been a better finisher than fifth.
That's true.
Races that are most likely to make the future stars... you're talking about the Ballymore, William Mullins had the first three. The Supreme had the second and third, didn't he? Arkley had the first and third. Triumph had the first four. That to me looks like the seeds being firmly planted for future domination.
Nothing's going to change quickly, is it?
No. I think it's going more and more.
They've still got the big owners. They've still got the best horses. One of Paul Nicholls' winners was a syndicate horse. Like, you know what I mean? And that's where we're at the moment.
When I'm feeling at my most worried, it's like jump racing is one game, a big game in Monopoly. And you know that way when someone starts to get in front and the game just tilts more and more their way because everybody's throwing money at them. Jump racing feels a bit like that with Willie Mullins just sort of becoming more and more successful, and that makes it harder for everybody else, you know?
Yes. Yes, and also Gordon Elliott actually bought the two biggest lots at the sale on Thursday night. So again, Paul Nicholls was saying that he got owners who were prepared to spend, I think, 410 for those horses, but they went for 420. So again, it just shows you, doesn't it, how
420,000 guineas, I suppose, was it, or pounds would it be?
Yeah. But astonishing, though, isn't it?
like it makes a difference.
but again, those boutique sales at Cheltenham, they have. Produce a heck of a lot of stars. They're already almost like a confirmed breeding ground for champions.
But I mean, if you spent that much on a horse, regardless of how much you have, you're on the phone every time it has a serious bit of work, aren't you? Going, is it sound?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's just extraordinary.
But honestly, I mean, owners and people with that sort of money, I think their interest in how much they want to spend changes. Because I know that there's an owner for Neil Mulholland, the Colours of Perseus Way, I can't remember the guy's name, he spent big to send a horse to Neil Mulholland. Which is great. I mean, you don't associate Neil Mulholland with horses that cost almost £300,000, but trends change, and owners with that sort of money come into the game, come out of the game, and who they choose to send their horses to it's up to them, really. I mean, the idea that you have to send it to Willie Mullins because Willie Mullins is the big superstar, he will train all your Cheltenham winners. We've perhaps been a little bit guilty of thinking that's the way we should always be thinking, but this week perhaps has shown that it's not necessarily completely true. So send it to the other places and they might just have a bit of fun. And who knows? The way people are, they change habits.
What an intriguing way to finish. I think that probably wraps up the Cheltenham Festival. I have to an award. The way it goes, because I award a winning pundit. And I think on this occasion, you know, because you know, you shouldn't be here today. You should be doing something different, and maybe golf or whatever.
Backing winners at 20 to 1.
And you very shrewdly picked up on Tuesday as the day to present. We had that golden hour. It was amazing. Constitution Hill and Honeysuckle. And I think you've delivered it so well. We're going to bring you back the next time we talk about the BHA's future strategy talks.
You're going, No, definitely not coming back.
You're now a confirmed part of the team. So, Paul Keeley, you are the winning pundit this week. Thank you very much indeed. That just about brings us to the end of the programme. Before we sign off, though, I have to point you towards the Racing Post app. It is a fabulous thing indeed. With it, you can, as it says there, stay ahead of the field. It's the world's number one racing app. It's easy to use, as Rosie Marchand shows us there. It's faster than ever. Who's that handsome gentleman there? It is everything that you need to enjoy the racing. Every race, every day, anytime, anywhere. Download the new app for free.
Thank you for watching. Thanks to Paul Keady. Thanks to Chris Cook. Thanks to James Stevens. We hope you enjoyed it. The Cheltenham Festival 2024. We'll be around in no time at all. Until then, quite a few front pages to get through. Hope you join us for those. Until then, bye-bye.